Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, glad you're along with us here on this Tuesday morning live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. If you want to get in today, make it early in the program because we've got a lot to do today as we'll talk with correspondents who cover all three of the other teams in the AFC South, the Colts, Texans, and Titans, and talk about how their off seasons have gone up until this point in time. Tony, not to belabor my point about The Voice, but quick, just have you heard of any of these people? Okay, these are the winners of The Voice the previous 9 years. Javier Colon.
No.
Jermaine Paul.
No.
Cassidy Pope.
Nope.
Okay. I remember a few of them from watching the seasons. Daniel Bradbury. Danielle Bradbury.
Nope.
Or Daniel Bradbury, for that matter. Tasani Chin.
Nope.
Josh Kaufman.
Nope.
Craig Wayne Boyd.
Nope.
Probably a serial killer, right, with the three-name thing going on. Sawyer Fredericks.
Nope.
Jordan Smith.
Nope.
Smith Jordan.
No.
No, any of those? All right,
nope.
Those are your nine winners.
They
for
might
The Voice.
Have some kind of songs
they
on the radio.
Probably are all great
singers.
I don't
listen to any pop radio anyway, so the odds of me, if I didn't watch the show, the odds of me of hearing about these people is very, very
nothing
low.
Leaks into your subconsciousness?
Like, I don't listen to virtually any
like,
pop.
I get them when they've been around for a while on Saturday Night Live, because eventually, after everyone, all the kids know about them.
Sure.
About 6 months later, Saturday Night Live might have them on as a guest. That's about it for me. And The Voice.
That's pretty much it for me, too. If they show up on Saturday Night Live, it's like, all right, let's see what this person has.
And maybe they're good.
Yeah.
They're usually good, but I don't know who they are until they get on there.
What
right,
happened
today,
to the girl from yes. Jacksonville, Brittany Lawrence? She was on The Voice. What happened to her?
She may still be on the Voice for all. Now, I don't watch it regularly. You know, I don't watch it every single week, but I happen to pop in from time to time. My wife loves it. It's a good thing we have more than one television in the house. You know, and honestly, right now, Monday, until Better Call Saul comes on, there's nothing compelling that I need to. Now, had I known the Mets were giving up seven in one inning, I might have flipped over. But
right.
Other than that, I
was watching the Braves fall to 0-6.
Oh, my gosh, man. Braves 0-6. Orioles won their sixth straight to start a season for the first time ever.
Yeah.
They've been around for a long time.
Long time.
That franchise. So that's pretty good. You heard Dan Hicken talking about McShay's perfect mock draft for every
Yay.
Team. He's trying to fit guys in. How do you see? I mean, here's what I don't get. If you can pick anybody and mm-hmm. shoehorn people in, Count O'Neill, or is it Keanu Neal? I don't know. I still don't know how you pronounce it. I'm going with Keanu because
it looks like Keanu.
Yeah, it looks like Keanu. Keanu Neal of Florida, right? I mean, it looks like a good player. I'm not saying he's not worth the 38th pick in the draft. I'm not sure he is, but I don't see how safety is a fit for the Jacksonville Jaguars that early in the draft. Now, you could argue if you draft Jalen Ramsey, maybe one day ultimately he becomes a safety for your football team. But I think you're drafting him if he falls to you at five, which I don't think he will, because he's got off-the-charts measurables in terms of a package of athleticism that you don't often see at many positions, or certainly at a position where a guy can play corner and he's over 6 feet tall and he can do all the things that he can do. You know, I don't look at Neal the way the guys write about him as anything other than a safety. And
no.
I just don't see that being anything this team's going to spend any kind of early draft pick on.
No, and I think more of a strong safety than a free safety, too. I think they may draft a safety at some point in this upcoming draft, but I don't think it's going to be in their first three picks.
Right.
Unless they feel like there's a value that they just can't pass up, because we've seen them do that in the past. Dave Caldwell has told us that they would have taken Rashad Green in the third round. They would have done that last year if A.J. Cann hadn't been there. That they would have taken him in the fourth round if they didn't like Sample as much as they did. And he was just around for him still in the fifth round. So if there's a player that they really like at a position, even if it's not one that they necessarily consider a need, they'll draft that guy if they feel like he's as good or better than what they have available to him on this roster. So if that situation came up, maybe safety is in play for them in the first three picks, but it's hard to connect them to a safety.
Maybe. I could sit here, and we can, you know, parse all these sentences and the words that have been said about the different draft picks, but I think A.J. Cann, while maybe not an obvious immediate we must have a guard need, if you looked ahead, you know, a year, you could say, all right, there's probably going to be at least an opening, and as it turns out, maybe a couple of spots on the offensive line where he could fit in. So that makes sense. And Sample, Tony, you had a guy who was underperforming for the first couple of years in Jacksonville in Jonathan Cyprian, and you brought him Sample in. You didn't have a free safety. Compete at both spots, win a spot. You like this talent a lot, and again, didn't get to play very much because of injury last year. I don't think they've soured on his talent, and that's the thing where that makes me, curious about the Neal selection. There's just one guy's opinion, but you would think that Todd McShay would. I would think he'd come up with a better plan for the perfect draft if you could pick anybody that's available and just really tailor them to that football team. I don't think that's the way you want to go if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll find out, though, soon enough, 2 weeks away. Today we get into the AFC South with the Colts, Texans, and Titans coming up, and we ask you today, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day, ranked all the teams, including the Jaguars, in the AFC South in terms of which teams have had the best offseason to date. So basically through free agency, who they've lost, who they've gained, who has the biggest net advantage from when the season ended to right now. And you can Twitter us up at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler. Jaguars Today Facebook page open for business. The text line is open, driven by Duval Ford at 641-1010. And that's also the phone in line if you want to get on board with us here. Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at Everbank, just kicking off. Right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, Jaguars Today live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Ceiling coming in very nicely for those who have concern about the air quality in our studio down here, the JOI studio. No concern, no fear. We're just fine. And Tyler Devitt back at 1010XL World Headquarters. 641-1010 is the text line driven by Duval Ford if you'd like to hop on there. We're going to get to the AFC South beginning at the top of the hour. We'll do the state in football and the Honda Drive Around the NFL a little bit earlier today, Tony. I know one of the stories that will be featured in the Honda Drive Around the NFL is Josh Gordon. Once again, kind of on the brink of throwing away his NFL career. I think he's had like his last 14 games, he had like 1,600 yards.
Oh, his stats are unbelievable.
They're off the charts. Ridiculous. For the small amount of time he's actually played. He had 1 year where he looked like he was a top three receiver in the National Football League. And since then, hasn't been able to get on the field because of his run-ins with the substance abuse policy. The latest suspension, by the way, remember it came from drinking.
On a flight.
Right. Wasn't necessarily a team play. I think the initial reports seem to confuse that it was a team flight. I don't think it was a team flight. He claimed to not know that drinking was prohibited under the terms of his deal. Look, you're responsible for knowing what the deal was, but it's a little bit of a man, really? I got caught smoking pot and now you're going to bust me for having a beer, which is legal. But if those were the terms of his deal, then it's his responsibility to know them. Either way, he was eligible for reinstatement. He applied for reinstatement a couple months back now and has been waiting. And the NFL media, at least the ones who are interested in the story, have been wondering what's been the holdup with Josh Gordon. Well, now we find out in a leak of confidential information. Of course, I don't really have a big issue with it. He may. I'm not saying he doesn't, but I want to know. So, screw his confidentiality, Tony. I need to know what Josh Gordon's up to. Apparently, he submitted a test that was positive for marijuana, but below the threshold that would signal, an automatic positive test.
Right? Yes.
Stay off the weed.
Like cannabinoids or whatever the little things that they detect in there. But the sample was too dilute. In other words, they felt like he took something to dilute it so that the parts per million or whatever wouldn't hit the threshold, right? Whether he drank a bunch of water beforehand or something else, it's supposed to be considered the equivalent of a failed test if you have that
right
circumstance turn up. Now, a report on Pro Football Talk this morning, Adam Schefter, by way of Adam Schefter, reporting that the NFL's potential reinstatement of him is going to be delayed 60 to 90 days to see if he can go another 2 or 3 months without a positive drug test. Doesn't make a ton of sense to me, honestly. If your policy is that a diluted sample is the same as a positive test. He failed a test. And I guess it's within the commissioner's discretion on discipline to do what he wants with Josh Gordon. In today's NFL, I'm really surprised if this is, in fact, the facts of the case, that they're giving him an opportunity to show, hey, this was maybe it was secondhand smoke. Maybe the diluted test was just you caught me at a bad moment and I'd been working out and drinking a bunch of water. I don't know, but I assume they're not just going to give him one test 2 to 3 months from now. They're going to test him consistently.
Well, I doubt he'd ever be on one test every 1 or 2 months at this point in his career.
You can cycle out of the program after a few years,
yeah, but
you need a few years.
He's going to have to cycle out.
Right.
That's just the position that Josh Gordon has put himself in. And look, if there are ways to dilute a test that you wouldn't know, right? Like if it is he had a test and they tested him in the afternoon and so he drank a bunch of water so that he would have to go basically by the time he had to go take the test or whatever. I don't know. But if there are reasons for a test to be diluted that wouldn't necessarily mean that he's trying to evade a positive test, then I applaud the NFL for having some logic and reason involved in one of these situations for the first time in a while when it involves our commissioner, Roger Goodell. So if that is the case, okay. If he can stay clean for 2 or 3 months, which he hasn't been able to stay clean for 2 or 3 months as far as we know in a long time, then okay, give him another shot. But Gordon is digging his own grave when it comes to his NFL career. And when you talk about how explosive he was 2 years ago, we watched Allen Robinson here in his second year in the league, 1,400 yards, 14 touchdowns, and marveled at that season. Josh Gordon had 1,650 yards in 14 games his second year in the league. That's how explosive he was for the Cleveland Browns.
Playing with who at quarterback?
Nothing.
A revolving door of quarterbacks.
And he played 5 games in 2014. He wasn't on the same kind of pace in 2014 before he got suspended, but he was a dominant player in this league.
That was his second year in the league, right?
Yeah, second year. That's directly comparable to what Allen Robinson was doing in his second year in the league. Now, Robinson isn't in any trouble, so the Jaguars don't have to worry about it, but that's the kind of player that Gordon was, and it's the kind of player that Cleveland has been missing for the last 2 years, and it's still this cloud hanging over that organization's head because Josh just can't seem to get it straight. Don't be around anyone that is smoking weed. Get away from it.
Hey, well, who's he living with right now, according to the latest report?
Manziel.
He's living with Johnny Manziel.
Yo, I'm cool. You're drunk.
I know your teammates from college. I get it. I really do. But I would think, even though Von Miller's had his issues with the substance abuse policy, I would feel much better about Johnny Manziel living with Von Miller if I were a Manziel, you know, fan supporter and seeing him try to get back in the league. Now you've got two knuckleheads. One of them who Manziel looks oblivious to how he's coming off, I think, to the public right now. When you get anytime you probably are more drunk than you think you are. At any given point, once you've had your third beer, and I'm just making up the thresholds here, but whatever you're drinking, I don't know if Johnny's drinking beer or high-end tequila or whatever he's drinking. 2 or 3 drinks in, oh, yeah, he's at that bulletproof stage. I'm not drunk. Who are you saying's drunk? I'm not drunk.
Yo, I'm cool. You're not drunk.
See? He knows. He's
We've
not
been
drunk.
Here for like 5 or 6 days. What have we been doing? We've been chilling. We've been cool.
Did you, right, for the last 5 or 6 days, how many times you see me here? Every day, right? Every day. Did you see the club owner come out, by the way, at the end of the video? And I think that's who it was. The guy who ran the place. Because he sees the guy, and Manziel, you know, is a bit of a politician. And he sees the guy, and he goes, we've been in here eating great food. Like, he's giving the guy a plug, right? And he kind of comes in at the end, and he has this look like, Johnny, I'm going to save you from yourself right now. And he kind of just grabbed him. And initially, I think Tyler was telling me when he watched, I think he thought he was one of Manziel's handlers or something like that. I think he was somebody who ran the place, and he knew that Manziel was getting himself digging him a hole deeper and deeper and deeper. But probably pretty good publicity for whoever he was hanging out over the last 5 to 6 days.
You've seen me here how many nights in a row? 5, 6?
A lot of times.
5 or 6,
yeah.
Exactly.
Where do you want to go?
What have we been doing since we've been here? Walking out, being chill.
So if Manziel's there every night and he's living with Josh Gordon, where's Josh Gordon been for the last five or six nights.
I don't know.
And will he, after a week of going to that particular venue, still be able to test negative for anything that the NFL wants to throw his way?
I don't know if Johnny Manziel physically can play the NFL game. I just don't know if he can. Right, I don't
know. We know Gordon can.
Gordon can play.
He can be a star.
Right, and he's throwing away millions of dollars for nothing. For nothing. For some fleeting feeling or high or whatever the heck it is that he's doing this for. It's for nothing in the end if you're Josh Gordon, that you're throwing away what looks like could be a very productive NFL career. You got to tell the people that are around you and get people around you that when the weed comes in, when the booze comes in, they say, no, we're getting out of here. We're gone. We're not going to be around this right now, Josh. We got to get you back on the field, and then if we can cycle out, and then we can go back to doing this.
Start over
you
again.
You can finish your career when you're 30 and party for the rest of your life, Josh. There's no reason to do it this way.
There's no foresight. There's no long-term thinking that goes on. And that, look, he's not the only guy in that position. Plenty of guys his age, younger, have issues. Plenty of guys my age have issues making solid decisions in life. And whether or not you think the NFL's drug policy is fair, if you want to play in the league and you value that above all else, then you've got to toe the line to some degree. And
that's
the thing. We talk about it so many times. It's not that hard to toe the line in the National Football League. It's once you're in the program that things get a little bit tougher. But now that you're in, know what the restrictions are. You wonder, had he not had that, had he not got caught there, I almost get the feeling, all right, so he doesn't get caught drinking beer and getting suspended last season. And everything that was said was that Josh Gordon was working out hard on the straight and narrow, avoiding all the stuff, and then you see this issue pop up. My guess is, had he not got caught drinking beer, he would have got caught doing something else at that point.
Look, you get tested once a year if you're not in the program. Players get tested once a year. They generally have a pretty good idea of when that one test is going to come. So even for the guys that are in the league that aren't in the program, who are smart enough to know, okay, my test is coming up. If I am a guy who likes to party, who likes to smoke a little bit of something, I just don't have to do it for this month and a half. Basically, I got to put it away for this month and a half. And then when you take that drug test, it's party time.
Do you know what date, by the way, they're starting the drug test this year? This is not a joke.
420?
8 days from now. I'm not kidding you. The NFL's all-season drug testing
makes it easy for everyone to remember.
On 420. And if you don't know what that is, go to your Google machine and look it up.
Look, we've heard the stories from around the league from former players and people we've talked to that they're like, it really is. Everyone knows when that test is coming.
And once it comes and goes, you're free and clear.
It's party time.
Unless you give them a reason.
Right.
Don't get pulled over drinking and driving. Don't get pulled over with pot in the car or something like that. And I'm not saying, I'm not advocating one way or the other. We're just talking about the reality of the situation.
How stupid it is to put yourself in the program.
A lot of people smoke pot, period, right?
Yeah.
Let's agree on that in America, right? I mean, it seems like Colorado and Washington State have thriving industries building up around that right now. But additionally, the subset of young people with money, disposable income, who, are professional athletes, I think there's a lot of pot smoking going on. And
sure.
I don't think I'm breaking any news when I say that.
No.
And so, does it affect? I think probably a lot of them are highly functioning, and it's not like they're chronic users where every single moment of the waking day, they're walking around high. I just think that, some just like to relax a little bit. Some probably do use it for pain management. I think that's probably an excuse for a lot of them to party and have a clear conscience about it. But whatever the case, get past your off-season test and don't do something so knuckleheaded that you get on their radar and enjoy, and we'll see you next summer.
It's pretty simple.
Is right. They cannot, under the laws of the collective bargaining agreement, test these players again throughout the season as long as they pass their first test. So if it comes on 420, 425, 502, whatever, once that's done, you're free and clear.
I always go back to the audio that we all heard years ago of Pac-Man's drug dealer basically talking to another associate because his phone had been tapped or whatever. But he was talking to another associate basically saying that he was telling Pac-Man, you got to back off, man. You know you got a drug test coming up here in a couple weeks. You just can't smoke anything for 2 weeks. This is his drug dealer trying to tell Pac-Man to back off.
Right.
And he failed a drug test.
Don't worry, I'll hold it for you.
Right.
It'll still be ridiculous here.
The situations that some of these guys put themselves in.
They don't care all that. Well, we've had former players tell us that it's been around the league, by the way, not just here in Jacksonville, that the day you pass your test and you know you passed it because you've been keeping clean for this very reason,
blow it out.
All hell breaks loose that night. That very night, all hell breaks loose.
Oh, yeah.
I'd wait until I got the results back. Maybe they come back that quickly. I think I'd want to make sure I have the paper in my hand signifying I'm clear, I'm free and clear on that. So Josh Gordon, honestly, on the one hand, you could say, all right, so this guy has been suspended for a year and may be in jeopardy of missing another season due to A, drinking a beer, and B, having too much water in his pee, okay? And whether you agree with it or not, that's the situation he finds himself in right now, but he's not making the right decisions, it looks like. And I'm thinking the one to share a bunk with Johnny Manziel is probably near the top of the list for both of those guys right now. Get some new influences in your lives, kids. This date in football, the Honda Drive around the NFL coming up. Then the top of the hour, we'll go around the AFC South with team correspondents for the Colts, Texans, and Titans. Talk about their off seasons. Our question of the day for you is this: grade and rank the AFC South teams on how they've done to this point prior to the draft, but with the major lifting done in free agency. Who has had the best all season? Rank them 1 through 4 in the AFC South. And you can tweet us and post on the Facebook page as well. And the text line, of course, is 641-1010, driven by Duval Ford. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. The State in Football straight ahead on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
We'll keep doing it until they lock the doors on us, though. This date in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Tony, I'm going to start with a pop quiz. First thing out of the gates.
Oh, boy.
I need you to give me as close of a rulebook definition as you can to the NFL penalty of clipping. How would you define clipping?
Clipping is... I really don't know. Is that when a player is engaged high and another player engages them low?
Close. It's basically throwing the body across the back of the leg of an eligible receiver or charging and falling to the back of an opponent below the waist. You can't hit people below the waist when you sneak up on them from behind, basically. It's clipping.
Sneaky.
You don't hear that called as strictly clipping anymore, although I think it's still maybe in the rule book. It probably falls under some other things. But on this date in 1940, that would be April 12th, 1940, the NFL cut the clipping penalty down to only 15 yards. It used to be a 25-yard penalty for chopping somebody in the back of the knee.
They didn't like that sneaky stuff.
You know what? I don't either. You know? I mean, come on. Guy's going to hit you in the back of the knee. All right, famous birthdays for this date.
At least the leg bends that way.
I guess. That's right. You've got that going for you on the knee joint. Lorenzo White was born on this date 50 years ago in 1966, former NFL running back, primarily with the Houston Oilers, one-time Pro Bowler. A local kid, Fred Weary, went to Mandarin High School, and he went on to play for the University of Florida and go to the NFL for about a half dozen seasons or so. And I believe T-Wig's good buddies with Fred Weary, if I'm not overstating it. I think I've heard him mention him in the past. Anyway, Fred Weary, happy 42nd birthday today. He was born on this date in 1974. Born on this date in 1985, we saw him featured all season long by Cam Newton's passing offense. Ted Ginn, 31 years young today, and born on this date in 1993, a guy I'm sure we'll be talking about coming up in just a little bit with Jim Wyatt from Titans Online. Doriel Green Beckham, the mammoth wide receiver of the Tennessee Titans. We'll see if he becomes Marcus Mariota's go-to guy in his second season in the league. He turns 23 years old today. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Saw a TV commercial for Invisalign yesterday. They are a certified Invisalign provider, and Dr. McCall's office offers a 10% discount on all first-time customer initial visits. You have a snoring issue in your house. Maybe it's you. Maybe it's a loved one. The SomnoMed Custom Fit Mouth Guard can solve that for you. Call 620-9225. These are just some of the services offered by Dr. McCall's office. In the meantime, visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That was this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
We just talked about it, but to recap, according to Fox Sports, suspended receiver Cleveland Browns receiver Josh Gordon failed another drug test last month. That failed test was reportedly because of marijuana and a dilute. Both Gordon's A and B samples were below the 35 nanogram threshold, but it qualifies as a failed test under NFL testing rules because of the presence of that dilute. Gordon missed all of the 2015 season, only played in five games in 2014 because of substance abuse-related suspensions. ESPN's Adam Schefter reported this morning that the NFL is delaying the reinstatement of Gordon until he can have 60 to 90 days with no red flag tests, leaving the door open for Gordon to potentially be available to the Browns for the 2016 season. Denver Broncos' Von Miller let everyone know on Instagram yesterday that he is not roomies with free agent quarterback Johnny Manziel, despite Manziel drunkenly stating it as a fact to TMZ this weekend. Some reports out there that he is rooming with Josh Gordon. Manziel sent out a tweet yesterday denying that, basically, but then quickly deleted that tweet, so who the heck knows?
Johnny Manziel is homeless right now.
Right, who Manziel is staying with or who Josh Gordon is staying with out there on Sunset Boulevard. According to Peter King and the Monday Morning Quarterback, the Titans have a solid offer to move out of the number one spot in the upcoming draft. No word on who that offer might be from, but the 49ers, the Eagles, and Rams are all teams that have been linked to quarterbacks in the top dozen picks, as well as Cleveland, and could keep the Titans in range to still potentially target Notre Dame's Ronnie Stanley, or if they only have to move down the one spot to number two, still be able to get Laremy Tunsil there with their number one pick. We will have Jim Wyatt of Titans Online on with us today at 11:40. I'm sure the number one pick in the upcoming draft may come up at some point.
There's some story, I forget who the source was. It was one I might have seen on PFT or Roto World or something like this, that the Titans may be torn. Might have been in the follow-up on Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback column. Titans were torn possibly between Tunsil and Stanley among the offensive linemen, which one they preferred. If I was going to ask you, who is the biggest wild card out of this whole thing that the Jags could end up with? And we think we have it all figured out, right? And I think it's extremely likely that if they have the opportunity to draft one of the three defensive players that we discuss all the time, that they will. But we do say, well, what about a crazy scenario where Tunsil slides, right? And it goes Ramsey number one. Let's say a quarterback goes number two. Let's say DeForest Buckner goes to the Chargers and, you know,
Jack or Bosa.
Right, Jack or Bosa. Let's say it's Jack, leaving Bosa out there, who maybe the Jags don't feel as explosive a player as you want with the number five pick in the draft. And we say, in that scenario, would you consider Laremy Tunsil? You'd have to consider him, right? What if they think Stanley's right on a par with Tunsil? And they did bring in Ronnie Stanley. Now the Jags brought in a boatload of prospects, right? And they're doing their, I'm going to say it again, due diligence. We're all getting tired of that phrase, at least I am, at this point in time. But they are, you know, laying the groundwork for not only, hey, what if we trade back? What if we find ourselves with a great offer to go back to the 12th pick or something like that? We need to have a wider range of guys to consider, the guys we consider the elite prospects. But could you imagine Ronnie Stanley is the first pick? I can't see it happening, but could you see Tunsil? Under a scenario where Tunsil's available, would it stun you if they took Tunsil with the fifth pick?
Not stun me. If they took him over one of the three guys that we've been talking about a lot, I'd be surprised.
Man, you've got to, to me, if you feel Tunsil is the kind of tackle, it's going to be an eight-time Pro Bowler. And I'm not saying they feel that way, but if you do, and you just say, you know what, I like Bosa, he's the best of a bad group of defensive ends, and he's a solid player, I think you take the guy who you think is going to be potentially a great player. Now, I'm not saying they feel that way about Bosa or Tunsil specifically. Just throwing a hypothetical out there. And then if you're willing to at least consider that hypothetical, wouldn't you have to consider the hypothetical of Ronnie Stanley? I think you would. I'm not projecting that, not saying it's at all likely. In fact, I think it's extremely unlikely. Coming up, we're going to talk about the other three teams in the AFC South, what kind of off seasons they've had up until this point. Let's go through quickly how McShay sees the perfect draft going for those teams, Tony. We told you for the Jaguars, he had Miles Jack going in the first round. He had Keanu Neal out of Florida, the safety, and then Emmanuel Ogbah in round three out of Oklahoma State as what McShay would deem the perfect draft for the Jags. It's funny, if you flipped Ogbah and put him in round two, I think a lot of people would say, okay, so you're taking Miles Jack and then you're taking one of the top half dozen pass rushers in the second round. I could see that, Heck, I'd love to get Ogba in round two. But if you just put a cornerback, give me Ogba, Jack, and the top cornerback whenever you take him in round two or three, I'd be happy with that right now. Wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, I think most Jag fans would be as well. I'm not saying those specific guys, but, yeah, what about those specific guys? Here's who he has the Colts taken. Has him taken Carl Joseph, safety out of West Virginia in the first round with the 18th pick. 48th pick, Cody Whitehair. I don't know if Cody Whitehair makes it to the 48th pick in the draft. A lot of people think he's the best interior offensive lineman in this draft, period. And if that's the case, I don't know if he's getting into the middle of round two. You know, usually I think teams look at guards, and he could play a little center as well. As safe picks, easier to project those guys because you're not asking him to do as much like on the edge against speed rushers. I'd be surprised if Cody Whitehair makes it to the 48th pick in the draft. Then he's got him going offensive tackle with Gerald Hawkins out of LSU in round three. So basically, you're just sitting there talking about a lot of offensive line help with the Indianapolis Colts. They definitely need some offensive line help. We've got Tom James from the Terre Haute Tribune Star around the corner. We'll discuss that with him. The Titans, Laremy Tunsil, number one overall, not a surprise.
Nope.
There, Eli Apple, cornerback out of Ohio State. That'd be a value pick at this point. I think a lot of people think Eli Apple is going to come off the board in round one, but I guess first pick of round two, or second pick of round two. Cleveland has the first pick of round two.
Correct.
This year. And then Christian Westerman, a guard out of Arizona State, going in the third round to the Tennessee Titans. Again, this is Todd McShay's so-called perfect draft, the way he sees it for teams. And then for the Houston Texans, they're going wide receiver in round one. They definitely need wide receiver help because you've got Jalen Strong potentially facing a suspension. He got popped with marijuana, driving around with marijuana this offseason. So Doxson, the wide receiver out of TCU, some people like him as the top wide receiver in this draft. So I don't think it's a lock that Laquon Treadwell is the number one guy off the board. I still think he's probably the betting favorite. But I think it's more a plurality. I think it's more of a Donald Trump wins the delegates with 41%.
Yeah, it feels like Treadwell is the guy that there's more plus things to feel about Treadwell than there is any of the other guys, but he's not the speed guy necessarily.
That's what you need.
And if there's a team that really just covets speed, then, yeah, you could see Doxson go ahead of him.
Jarrell Adams, tight end of South Carolina in round two. It's funny, Houston was one of the teams we did this weekend on our show on Sirius as we build towards the draft, and they could draft every skill position but quarterback in this draft. And certainly running back, even though they signed Lamar Miller, they need more depth at running back, maybe a starting wide receiver. Cecil Shorts may be the next guy that we haven't mentioned there. And at tight end, they have Ryan Griffin and not much else. And then Sua Cravens, the safety out of USC, who a lot of people think will go before that pick, which would be the 85th pick with the third pick that the Houston Texans own in this draft. You can look it up if you're an ESPN insider at ESPN.com in the NFL, our NFL draft section. Todd McShay's perfect draft for every team, at least through the first three rounds. We will turn our attention to the remainder of the AFC South coming up. Reminder, the question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships is this. Rank all four AFC South teams based on their offseason to date. How have they done handling free agency, the pluses and minuses, the guys they've lost weighed against the guys that they've gained as the major lifting in free agency is done and the draft still a couple of weeks away. Who do you think has scored best? Rank them in order, and you can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, and a myriad other ways you can send your picks in as well. Tom James, the Terre Haute Tribune Star, joins us next as we get into the Colts, followed by the Texans and the Tennessee Titans. It's Jaguars today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Now, more Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Jaguars today, just about 2 weeks from the start of the 2016 NFL Draft. If things go well, we're 2 weeks away from our latest version of our media mock draft. So we'll have that coming up for you to get you ready for the real thing. But we thought now would be a good time to kind of assess where things stand with the state of the rest of the teams in the division. We talk Jags every day, and today's no exception. But let's take a look, Tony, with the Indianapolis Colts. Joining us now, Tom James. He writes for the Terre Haute Tribune Star, and he joins us here on 1010XL. Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fine down here, Tom. We'll be doing much better if you tell us that the poor play of Andrew Luck when he did play last year is a sign of things to come in 2016. But in all seriousness, we know he was dealing with some injuries last year and he missed a lot of time. But in the time he did play, the statistics were down. All the key stats, yards per attempt, touchdown percentage, interceptions were up. How do you assess what was going on with Andrew Luck when he was on the field last year?
There was just a lot of things going on in terms of internal things with Coach Pagano, the offensive coordinator at the time, Pep Hamilton, and then he was replaced mid-year by Rob Krasinski. And there was a lot of things going on that I think that it's kind of a lost year for the entire franchise, and they kind of battled back late in the season. But I think that Luck was kind of dinged up going into the year, and it just kind of carried over into the season.
Last offseason, Ryan Tannehill got the contract extension in Miami. Russell Wilson got the contract extension up in Seattle. A lot of the talk was that Andrew Luck is going to get his extension eventually, and it's going to basically make fools of those other two contracts as far as the kind of money we'll be talking about with Andrew Luck. He has that injury-plagued season last year. They gave him that fifth-year option in last offseason, so they have him under control for this season. Is there any urgency right now in that Colts organization to get a contract done with Andrew Luck?
Yeah, they want to get something done. I think right now the time period they're looking at is 4th of July. They want to get something done by the 4th of July. They start camp early this year because they're going to be in the Hall of Fame game against Green Bay. So they want to get something tied up, get taken care of, and they're really shooting for that 4th of July weekend, sort of a time frame on getting everything all taken care of.
Tom James, Terre Haute Tribune Star, covering the Colts here with us on 1010XL. Tom, Matt Hasselbeck played much better than anyone could have expected last year in relief of Andrew Luck. Do you think there was much consideration to trying to entice him to come back for another year? I know he got the deal to play or to go work at ESPN. I mean, are they leaving themselves once again in a bad spot if Andrew Luck goes down? I guess any team starting quarterback goes out, you're in a tough spot. But considering how well Hasselbeck played last year, are you surprised they didn't do more to retain him?
Well, I just think that he was physically and mentally beat up last season. I thought he did a yeoman's job of coming in and in a tough situation. And then he got hurt at the end of last season, and they had to end up having to sign two quarterbacks just to end up the year. They ended up signing Josh Freeman and Ryan Lindley just to play against Tennessee in the final game of the season, and they end up winning that game. And so I think they kind of saw the handwriting on the wall that, you know, Hasselbeck was limited in the things they wanted to do offensively, throwing the football, mobility of the quarterback, as well as he played when he was in there. They were kind of limited in what they could do. And I think they kind of wanted to take a long look at somebody and bring somebody in who kind of fit more of the Andrew Luck mold as a backup quarterback, so they wouldn't have to change the offense all that much. They brought in Scott Tolzien, who had been the backup in Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers, and so right now he'll be the number two guy, apparently anyway. And I think he kind of fits a little bit more of what they want to do. At least that's what they're hoping for.
A lot of tension was talked about last year in regards to the front office there in Indianapolis with head coach Chuck Pagano. And was it a Super Bowl or bust year basically for the Colts? They go out, get Andre Johnson, they get Frank Gore, and it felt like a team that was adding some of those last veteran pieces that they thought could push them over the top. Pagano kept. Do you still feel like there's any of that tension between ownership, front office, and head coach right now?
Well, if there is, they're hiding it pretty well. I think that there was a meeting of the minds after the season, and Pagano was brought in, talked to the owner, Jim Irsay. Brinkston was brought in, talked to the owner, and they did look outside to if Pagano wasn't going to come back. That they talked, or there was some interest anyway and another NFL head coach. So they decided to, after kind of checking all the dots and crossing their T's, that they would kind of go with the status quo, but the warning had gone out. Guys, we've got to get along. Everybody's got to get along to make this thing work. They say it is. We'll see what happens.
Tom James, Terre Haute Tribune star, talking Colts here with us. Jarrell Freeman, a loss in free agency. Not a lot of high-profile additions. How do you think they did? Did they address any of the holes they felt they had during the free agency period, Tom?
Well, it's funny because Ryan Grigson in the past has always been a big guy in terms of free agency. He's always brought in players, signed players. He talked about last year when they brought in Frank Gore and Andre Johnson. He's done that since he's been with the Colts. This year, he's kind of held back a little bit, partly because of the Luck contract coming up, but also they want to build through the draft. And they've taken some shots on some guys that didn't pan out. Andre Johnson did not pan out. They did not re-sign him. And so Frank Gore did pretty well. But I think they decided they're going to kind of pick and choose the free agent state that they can get and then really concentrate on getting better through the draft. And that's kind of what they're aiming for right now.
Did they prioritize keeping Dwayne Allen over Kobe Fleener at tight end? Both of them free agents. Fleener wound up in New Orleans this offseason, but they were able to retain Dwayne Allen.
Yeah, I think that that surprised some people because Dwayne Allen he's probably physically the best tight end on the Colts roster, but he's been hurt a lot ever since he's been with the Colts, and keeping him on the field and in games has been a big thing, and Kobe Fleener may not be as physically gifted, but he stayed healthy and he's played and he's gotten better every year. And so I think some people thought they might stay with Fleener and let Dwayne Allen go, but they decided to go with potential over performance. And if Dwayne Allen can stay healthy, he could be one of the top tight ends in the league. He's that good. It's just keeping him healthy.
Tom, how do you think they view this year coming up? Are they kind of in win-now mode? I mean, they did go 8-8 last year despite all the ups and downs, which was only a game out in what was a down year in the AFC South. Are the Colts looking for instant impact in the draft? Are they looking for the best values that are going to help them over the long term? Because they do have some age at a few spots. I mean, Frank Gore is still, you mentioned him, top in the depth chart at running back. How do you see the needs, and how does that fit with the plan and what they envision for themselves, whether they're in win-now mode or kind of restocking a little bit?
I think they want to win now, but I think they're kind of going more for the long term instead of trying to put everything together for a one-shot deal. They want to build through the draft, add a few free agents in some key spots, but I think they've got to get that offensive line situation taken care of. It's been an issue for several years, even dating back to when Bill Polian, the last couple of years, Bill Polian was in charge of the Colts. And so they got to get that offensive line situation taken care of. There's some issues on the defensive line. As you said, Jarrell Freeman is now with the Bears. They need to improve an inside linebacker. They let Greg Toler go. They signed a cornerback from San Diego, Patrick Robinson, to kind of fill Toler's spot. But they've got there's several areas that they've got to get better at if they want to be one of the elite teams in the AFC.
You mentioned this team wanting to build through the draft. A couple of years ago, they drafted Bjorn Warner. How much has that pick hurt them as far as trying to develop some kind of young pass rush with this team?
It shut him back a little bit because I think they envision, Robert Mathis, he's getting up, he's probably playing the last 3-4 years of his career. And, he came off the torn Achilles last year and really wasn't back to being the Robert Mathis that we all knew to about midseason to late in the year. And how much longer can he play at that level? And he played well late in the season, but how much longer can he go like that? And I think they kind of thought Bjorn Warner might be that guy, should be that guy, as highly as he was drafted. That did not work out. They tried him as a rush linebacker. They tried him at the other outside linebacker spot. That did not work out. Late in the year, he wasn't even playing a whole lot at all, not even on special teams. So it got to the point where they decided to cut bait and go somewhere else, try to find something else. And in the draft, I think they're going to try to find a pass rusher in the draft.
All right, Tom, then give us that, what your target guy would be at 18, whether it's a pass rusher or something else. The Colts haven't selected this high in a while. If there were one guy that's being talked about in Indianapolis that the Colts would likely target with the 18th selection, who would be the dream realistic pick that could fall to them?
Last year they shocked everybody when they took Philip Dorsett, receiver out of Miami. When they really most people didn't think they needed to draft a receiver that high. If Ezekiel Elliott, if Ohio State is there at 18, it would not shock me if the Colts went that direction, because they need to find a long-term answer at running back. Frank Gore played well. Again, he's on the back end of his career. They need to find a guy who can be a three-down running back who can pass protect, help protect Andrew Luck, and be a force in the running game. It would not surprise me to see the Colts go after him if he's available.
All right, if he, in fact, is available. If not, we'll see if they target a running back at some point in this upcoming draft. They just, by the way, picked up former Jaguar Jordan Todman recently. Tom James on Twitter, at Tribstar T James, if you want to follow all the latest on the Indianapolis Colts. Tom, we appreciate the time, man. Enjoy the lead-up last few weeks until the NFL draft. We'll talk to you over the summer.
Sure, anytime, guys.
All right, thank you, buddy. There he goes. Tom James, the Terre Haute Tribune star, who covers the Indianapolis Colts as a regular there on the Colts beat. So there you have it. The Colts, Tony, I see them on the brink here. I think this team could get bad in a hurry if they don't. Look, I think they need to address their offensive line.
Yeah.
They've got some age in some key spots. They didn't really add much in terms of
impact.
We've
talked the last couple of years. It's not a great roster.
No.
It's an okay roster with a really good quarterback.
And he better play better than he did last year, nagging injuries or what have you. He went 2-5 in his 7 starts last season.
And when last offseason you are the team that's going to go out and sign Andre Johnson and Frank Gore, you were in the AFC Championship game the year before. They had taken those steps forward under Andrew Luck, where they make the playoffs, they win a game, they win 2 games. They're playing in the AFC Championship game 2 years ago. And a lot of people thought that maybe it's the next logical step is this team is going to be playing in the championship game again, potentially in the Super Bowl in the AFC. Well, Andrew Luck was not very good last year for the Indianapolis Colts, even when he was on the football field for that team and not dealing with the kidney injury that wound up causing him to miss 9 games last season. They weren't very good, and the holes that they have in that roster showed up more and more with Andrew Luck not being on the football field. Still good enough to go 8-8 in a really bad division. They could still go 8-8. It feels like Houston may have improved this offseason. At least they feel like they found a quarterback. We'll talk about that here in just a moment. The Jaguars certainly feel like they got better this offseason. Are they ready to compete for a division title? They better be. You know, in year 4, they expect to be competing for that, I would think, here in Jacksonville. So are the Colts, it feels like they're kind of on that precipice of it's either go time or it's going to be time to try to find some kind of pieces and rebuild around Andrew Luck going into the future.
We will talk about that Texans offseason coming up next. The analyst from HoustonTexans.com, also their sideline reporter, John Harris, a Jacksonville guy, in fact, will join us coming up next. We'll talk about Brock Osweiler, Lamar Miller, and many more as we get into a couple of quick shout-outs, Tony. My wife works at Sebastian Middle School down in St. Augustine, and she's friends with Mr. Neville at school, and he's friends with some dude in Orange Park who really likes the show. So there's that. So a shout-out to Mr. Neville's friend in Orange Park because my wife mentioned him. And also Lauren from the Jaguars Digital Marketing Department was so nice. I walked in with her this morning, and she had such complimentary things to say about the show despite my presence on it that we figured we'd say hello to her as well. She does a terrific job around here, and always nice to hear those kind of things. Coming up next, the Houston Texans, division champs last year. What have they done this offseason? We'll get into it on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
First down out to the 32, 2:20 to play here in the ballgame. Blake drops the throw, pump fake. Now throws it up the left sideline. Wants Allen Robinson. Allen has it. He is knocked out of bounds. That is a catch. That'll send Blake over the yardage total he needed. He needed 179 yards to become the all-time single-season passing yardage leader for Jacksonville. So congratulations to him for doing that. It's a 23-yard gain.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I would describe Frank Frangie as subdued on that play call, Tony, in Jaguars Radio Network.
It was like that lone star in a dark, dark night.
Blake Bortles finished the season with a club record 4,428 yards as he threw for 215 in Week 17 last year, a 30-6 loss to the Houston Texans and a sweep of the season series by the Texans over the Jacksonville Jaguars. John Harris writes for HoustonTexans.com. He does a lot of stuff for the Texans, covering them for radio and TV, and, of course, their sideline reporter as well. And he joins us here on 1010XL to talk Texan football. Good morning, John. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I will say that that week 17 was definitely – it was a fun weekend for us. I know it had to be a frustrating weekend for you guys, but it definitely was the – you know, it's funny. After that game, I wondered exactly what the Jaguars were thinking, allowing Whitney Mercilus and J.J. Watt to be singled up most of the day, because that was – man, that was when those two were really at their peak, was that last week 17 game.
Well, yeah, the Luke Jokel – did not, let's say, have his finest hour or hours on that particular.
Yeah, I was trying to be nice. I mean, I was. I mean, Luke.
No, he was terrible, man. Look, we know we're not blind. We saw it, what happened. And in fact, Tony and I remember remarking, either on the post game that very day, or maybe just discussing it in the studio, that it was like Mercilus was having his fun, and J.J. Watt said, "Wait a minute. I'm the star here. Let me come get some of that." And they would flip sides and basically take turns as to who was going to abuse Luke Jokel that day. We did not enjoy that memory, John.
Well, you know, it's interesting. That very first series of the game, you know, the big talk in Houston for the 3 weeks leading up to that game was J.J. Watt and the cast or the bulb or whatever it was he had. In the very first series, he broke past, I think it was Sam Young at right tackle. He went past Young. He sacked Blake, and he got up, and he showed that he had all five fingers out. He didn't have the cast on. He thought, okay, that's a sign this could be a pretty long day. But I'll tell you this, if there's any team, you know, we talk about it locally, if there's any team that probably scares the Texans, it scares me more than any other, it's Jacksonville and what they've been doing, what they've been building, you know, signing Malik Jackson, bringing in Chris Ivory, the running back. I mean, I love that running back combination as long as those two guys stay healthy. And, of course, the receivers, the two Allens. And again, as with most NFL teams, it just goes back to the progress of Blake at quarterback.
It does. And now for the Houston Texans, on your side, it's going to go in large part on the progress that Brock Osweiler makes at quarterback. John, why do you think they identified him as clearly the guy that they had to make a major push to sign, and obviously they brought him in?
Well, I think there was a frustration, and everybody thinks it was from Bob McNair, you know, on down. It really was from everybody throughout the organization that they really weren't getting consistent quarterback play. There was one day that we did our coach's show with Coach O'Brien, and we were just joking kind of off the air. You know, Coach, how many guys have taken a snap? Not just as a quarterback, but how many guys have taken a snap the 2 years that you've been here? And he took out a pen and paper, and he started writing it all down. And it ended up being like eight or nine guys with, you know, Cecil Shorts threw a pass, and Arian Foster took Wildcat snaps, and Jonathan Grimes did the same thing. So I think there was some frustration that there had been no consistency at the position. And when you think about what they were able to do with Brandon Weeden against the Colts when he came into the game, he had been there for 3 or 4 weeks. You know, T.J. Yates on Monday Night Football against Cincinnati, you can really see that they can work wonders and do wonders with the quarterback position if they have somebody there that buys in and has somebody with some talent. Well, Brock Osweiler comes here with a little bit of talent. He blew everybody away when he came here on free agency Thursday or whatever that was, and talking to everybody throughout the organization. And they needed a guy that could step up to the front of the room and be the offensive face of the franchise. And I thought about this just recently. Teams throughout the NFL will have, you know, their quarterbacks get together with the wide receivers, and J.J. Watt had his. You know, he brought up like 20 or 25 guys up to Wisconsin to the cabin. And I thought, who was doing that for the offense the last 3 years here in Houston? Nobody was. Well, then you look up and Brock Osweiler's got a passing camp going on in Arizona, and you think, man, they finally have the offensive face of the franchise. Now, is he going to be Matt Schaub, a guy who had a pretty good run of success before it just fell off a cliff in 13? Or is it going to be more Brian Hoyer? Who's to say? But I got a feeling just watching every snap that he took with the Broncos last year that it's probably going to be closer to Schaub. Sure, he's going to have some hurdles to get over. The guy's been in the league. This is going to be his fifth year in the league. So he knows a little bit about the league. He studied the defenses. He studied under Peyton Manning. And now he's getting, I think, some pretty good tutelage from Bill O'Brien, George Godsey on the offensive side. And they've added some weapons with Lamar Miller. He's got DeAndre Hopkins. And I would expect that pick number 22 and beyond – they'll look at some more offensive pieces to give him some help.
Yeah, that offensive backfield, Arian Foster, not going to be there for the Texans for the first time in a long time. He's obviously coming off the Achilles injury. They release him this offseason, bring in Lamar Miller to replace him in that backfield. Do they expect it to be business as usual? Lamar Miller, certainly a game-breaking talent with that long end speed, can be an effective receiver out of the backfield. How much of a loss is it not having Arian Foster in that backfield?
Well, the 2011 Arian Foster would have been a massive loss. A massive loss. 2012 Arian Foster, massive loss. But the 2015 Arian Foster, a guy that, you know, tore his Achilles tendon in the Miami game. He hurt his groin during training camp, which everybody saw in Hard Knocks. He just really wasn't himself through even the games that he played last year. He was a great receiver, but the running game really struggled. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact there was no juice. Lamar Miller brings juice. He's got something this team has not had through since its inception. They got some speed at that position. And there will be times last year, and look, the offensive line wasn't great, but there would be times that there would be a hole there. And a guy with some speed could get to and through it. But the guys the Texans had last year were fairly pedestrian, and they'd pick up 4 or 5 yards. So I think the offensive line will look a little better with a guy like Lamar Miller. And we saw him up close and personal the week after we went to Jacksonville in October. We flew back down to Miami. Lamar Miller went for 186 yards. On 14 carries or something like that in a half. And it was brutal. But the one thing that we saw was the speed. And I think that's the one thing that Bill O'Brien's talked about. You got to get faster. There's no speed on this team. Even a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, we love Hop. He's not a burner. He just catches everything in his vicinity. And that way he's sort of like Allen Robinson. Not a burner, but he can catch at every level because he's so good with the contested catch. So I think that's what Lamar Miller gives you, that aspect of speed that this team, this organization has never had. Now can it add more to it, especially in the offensive side? And that's where pick number 22 comes in. You know, can it be a guy like Will Fuller? Can it be a guy like Corey Coleman to really add that speed element that it hasn't had? Now you got Lamar Miller. Now you got a rookie wide receiver to go along with Hopkins, with Osweiler. Man, all of a sudden you've got something on the offensive side of the ball. And now you can start to put some fear in defensive coordinators.
John Harris here with a sideline reporter for the Houston Texans with HoustonTexans.com and discovers the Texans from stem to stern. John, Jalen Strong, an arrest back in February, and he was in possession of marijuana. What do the Texans feel? Are they anticipating some kind of league discipline, be it a suspension or otherwise, for Strong?
I don't get the feeling that they're anticipating that. I think they'll weather the storm on that if it comes to. I don't think they've – you know, it's funny you bring it up because – Jalen was out working with Brock Osweiler, and you know, we posted a couple of videos from that on our site on HoustonTexans.com, and I don't even think that we thought that there will be anything that comes from it. I think the most bothersome thing is Bill O'Brien has talked about from the day he's gotten here, and most coaches do, you want smart football players. Well, how smart was that? I mean, how dumb do you have to be in a Maserati that has no plates? I mean, seriously. How are you? I mean, you might as well just put a big siren on your car that says, hey, come arrest me. And then beyond that, then you've got, then you've got goods in the car that you probably shouldn't have. So from that standpoint, you just go, what are you thinking? So hopefully it's a lesson that a young player has learned and he can move on from that. And he can end up being the solid number two receiver. He showed at the end of the year, especially against the Jags that last game, I believe he had 5 or 6 catches. He really showed what he can do when he's out there full time. So hopefully he can step up and be that number two wide receiver opposite DeAndre. But you got to question the decision making a little bit. But hopefully he's past that. Young guy made a stupid mistake, and hopefully he can move on from this.
We know J.J. Watt, Whitney Mercilus going to be there for that pass rush for the Houston Texans. What is the health status of Jadeveon Clowney, and have the expectations for him in 2016, does it feel like they're different than maybe they were when he was the number one overall pick 2 years ago for the Texans?
You know, from some people, that's the case. For some, they're ready to write him off and trade him. And I tell those people, you know, they need to be drug tested, because when you see Clowney at full health, and therein lies the rub, I understand he's not always been at full health, but against New England, against Buffalo, games in December, man, that guy was flat out dominant at times. And that's the kind of thing. It can't be at times. It has to be all the time. And he's got one thing that I haven't seen anybody at that position. I mean, Whitney got to where he could win with all of his his technique with his pass rush moves. And he worked throughout the year with Mike Vrabel on his pass rush moves. J.D. wins with power. Power unlike I've ever seen at the outside linebacker position. But now he's got to incorporate that a little bit more. He loves that inside move. So now he's got to incorporate that inside move with a little bit more. How do I win, you know, without power? How do I win, you know, dip and rip on the outside? How do I get a tackle to jump to the outside that go back to the inside move that easily? He's got to refine his game. His power is off the chart. The skill is there. He's got to stay on the field. But if he does, and of course, that's a big if, and a lot of people throughout the city kind of feel that way too. It's a massive if Jadeveon Clowney can be 100% healthy. But if he is, and Merciless is healthy, and Watt is back to, I mean, Watt, by week 17 last year, was probably about 80%. If those three guys are where, where they're supposed to be, that pass rush can be the best in the league without question. But it's just a matter of Clowney being 100% healthy for all 16 games. And that is a big, massive if. If he is, then look out. If not, it's going to be Merciless or Watt again.
All right, John, as we stand here about 2 weeks away from the NFL draft, how would you rank the top three needs for the Texans? And with that, is there a specific player that they would really covet that has a chance to be there with the 22nd overall pick, their first-round pick? In other words, who's the ideal first-round selection that's within the realm of reality?
Well, I think there are three things they need to add. They need to add an offensive weapon with speed. Yeah, I don't care if it's running back, wide receiver. It's got to be an offensive weapon with speed. Then I think they need a defensive end that's got to be opposite J.J. Watt because they lost Jared Crick. They've got a couple of bodies in Brandon Dunn, Christian Covington. They've got a few bodies. They don't have an impact player on the other side of J.J. Watt. And then I think they, even though they signed Jeff Allen and Tony Bergstrom, I still think they need interior offensive line help. I think that the defensive end and the speedy offensive weapon, the value fits at 22 more so than interior offensive lineman. I don't know if there's too many offensive linemen that I would say fits at number 22, but I think defensive end, and there's so many of them in this draft, this defensive line draft is extraordinary. You got Vernon Butler who could be quicker at that position and be more disruptive upfield. And you got the Alabama guys, Jerron Reed, A'shaun Robinson, who would be stellar against the run. I could see them at 22. But the two that people have honed in on mostly are Corey Coleman from Baylor and Will Fuller, wide receivers out of Notre Dame. And Bill O'Brien was at Baylor Pro Day and worked with Corey Coleman a lot. So I know there's some interest there, but I really think they want to go fast and they want speed. So I think it's one of the two receivers and Corey Coleman and Will Fuller that will give them some downfield threats, especially with a guy with a big arm like Osweiler. I think that's probably the way they're going to go if those two guys are on the board to look at those two speedy wide receivers.
All right, we'll find out. We're only 14 days away from round one of the NFL draft. John Harris, did I say 14? I think 16 is more accurate. It's what it is. I just add the two on there at the end. John Harris, HoustonTexans.com. You can follow him on Twitter at JHarrisFootball. That's the initial J, Harris Football. And check him out as well at his own site, FootballTakeover.com. John, we always appreciate the insight. Not going to wish you luck, but we'll talk to you when it's appropriate sometime over the summer, I'm sure.
Likewise, I hope you guys enjoyed pick number 5, Christian Hackett. Oh, wait, no, you're not going to draft Hackenberg.
Yeah, well, you know, the funny thing, the thing with O'Brien, you know, he's going to draft Hackenberg. The fact that he coached him, that means he knows his pluses and his minuses, right? I mean, I never got that, why people assume just because you coached him. You may be the last guy who'd want to coach a guy again because you've got that intimate knowledge of him, and now it doesn't seem like that's even an idea for the Houston Texans. So we will not be taking Hackenberg either. We're very happy that we didn't have to go out and hit the free agent market for a quarterback this all season, John. Thank you.
Yeah,
though,
if you guys end up with Jalen Ramsey, I'm going to be ticked. Jalen Ramsey or Miles Jack, I'm going to be ticked. Those would be two great pieces, but, man.
I think Jack is a lot more likely than Ramsey just because I don't think he'll be available. But we'll find out soon enough. John, good stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you later.
As always, guys, really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, man. John Harris, the sideline reporter for the Houston Texans and a member of the HoustonTexans.com writing
group. It sounds like a team that, at least in Houston, we were talking about earlier in the show, that there may be a team that's prioritizing speed over all the overall package at wide receiver, and it sounds like Houston may be that kind of team because of what they got in an overall package in DeAndre Hopkins. So it at least sounded like, talking to him there, that if all the receivers were available to Houston to make a choice out of, that it would probably be Dachshund or Coleman or Will Fuller over a guy like Treadwell, even if he's the more prioritized receiver in this draft.
It does. I think I would assume Treadwell's gone in the first 21 picks. But
probably.
Not a mortal lock.
No.
Not a mortal lock that that's the case. You see guys slide from time to time. Jim Wyatt, TitansOnline.com. What about the team with the number one overall pick? We'll take a look at the Titans next. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Play clock at 6. They finally snap it. He punts it away. Low line drive punt. Rashad comes up, fields it on the run to the 32. Out past the 40-yard line. In the Titans territory. Still on his feet. Inside the 40-yard line. Inside the 30. Up the right sideline. Rashad Green knocked out of bounds. Inside the 10-yard line. Boy, is it great to have Rashad Green back. A tremendous return. It's first and goal, Jacksonville.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, hey, it's good, Tony. Jack split with the Titans last year. Got a W here. We can talk about a W.
Yeah, they can look forward to another Thursday night trip to Jacksonville, probably in the upcoming season, and hopefully get handed another loss. It's become a tradition.
Yes, well, let's hope so. It'll be what do they call it? Color rush, right?
Yeah.
It's color rush all season long.
Cold, color rush, bold rush, whatever.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. Bold rush, it's all good. Let's talk with Jim Wyatt, who is, for my money, the best guy who's covered the Titans since probably they've been in existence as a group, formerly with the Tennessean in Nashville, now a member of the TitansOnline.com team in Nashville. What's up, Jim? Good morning. How are you, sir?
Not much. I'm doing great. How you doing, Mike? I appreciate the comment.
Hey, we're doing very well and well-deserved. And let's start things off with the decision to retain Mike Mularkey in Tennessee. You know, Jaguar fans think that's the one thing we may have over the Tennessee Titans, clearly, because you don't have a lot of Mike Mularkey fans here in the city of Jacksonville. Why is he, in your opinion, Jim, the right fit for that team at this moment?
Well, I think he's the right fit just because I think, you know, the way things have developed here with the new general manager, John Robinson, I think Mike Mularkey and John Robinson have a shared vision of how they want to build this football team. And I think also Mike Mularkey, you know, during his time here, you know, whether it's a tight ends coach initially and then as, you know, taking over as interim head coach last year, I just think he, you know, he's got a good understanding with the players. You know, they have an expectation of him. He has an expectation of what he expects out of them, and developed a pretty good relationship with players. You know, I think he's changed from when he was there. I know I talked to people in Jacksonville. I know I talked to people in Buffalo, and I'll be honest. I mean, some of them don't have great opinions of Mike Mularkey because the way maybe he handled some things in his previous stints. And I think he learned from those. Mike Mularkey said himself he learned from those experiences. I think he's a different guy than what people remember him as in Jacksonville. I mean, during his time there, I mean, he didn't have the best opportunity to succeed during his 1 year in Jacksonville. And I think people in Buffalo will tell you that, you know, his time there was so short, he didn't have enough time to develop things the way he wanted to. So, you know, ownership here felt like he was a good fit moving forward. I do think the pairing with Robinson's good. And I think with time to implement things the way he wants to do them, I think in the long run, he'll prove to be, you know, a good fit for this organization.
The big move for the Titans this offseason, at least until we see what they do with that number one overall draft pick here in a couple weeks, is the trade to acquire DeMarco Murray from Philadelphia. Murray, a guy who 2 years ago had over 400 touches his last year in Dallas, led the league in rushing. That basically got cut in half in Philadelphia. He was obviously not happy with his role with the Philadelphia Eagles. How do you see the Tennessee Titans using him more as that workhorse back that he was 2 years ago, I'm sure?
Yeah, he'll be more of a workhorse. And I think the thing in Philly, you know, in Dallas, he got a lot of opportunities. He was running behind a really good offensive line. They were able to just take advantage of his strengths, which have been just running straight ahead and being physical. and kind of wearing teams down a little bit. He's got a good burst to him as well. He goes to Philadelphia. He shares the load with a couple other running backs. Didn't really ever feel like he got into a rhythm. You know, he said himself, he kind of joked the first time I talked to him just about he almost felt like he has the year off last year because he just wasn't used and his skill set wasn't taken advantage of like it had been previously. You can be sure the Titans are going to feed him, but in order to do that, you know, they've got to be competitive. They've got to be in games. I think you'll see, you know, the Titans have a good mix of run and pass with Mariota and DeMarco in the running game, but he gives them a completely different look. I mean, that's one thing about Mariota last year, sacked 38 times, but a lot of times, you know, people knew he was throwing it. They couldn't run the ball. They didn't have a consistent running game at all. And I think having a guy like DeMarco Murray takes a lot of pressure off the quarterback position.
Jim Wyatt, TitansOnline.com, here with us on 1010XL. Jim, number one pick in the draft. A lot of people suspect it'll be Laremy Tunsil, perhaps a trade in the offing. Give us the scenarios, the likely scenarios as you see them and the chances that they play out that way.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't sleep on Jalen Ramsey either. A guy that I know right down the road, you know, in Tallahassee, and I'm sure a guy that the Jaguars fans probably envisioning getting as well. I mean, I went to Ramsey's pro day at Florida State. I talked to him yesterday when he was in the building here on his pre-draft visit. He's, you know, I'm not making a call, obviously. I'm not even, anywhere, close to the room where the call is made, but watching Ramsey at his pro day and knowing what this defense needs and hearing people talk about him, I mean, he's in play for the number one pick. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And while Tunsil certainly would fill a big need at left tackle, you know, this organization has proven in the past, you know, Michael Roos was one of them, you know, taken in the second round in 2005, and he ends up being a starter for 10, 12 years. You can find, a good tackle in the second round and at other points of the draft. So it's not as much of a no-brainer as I think some people lead you to believe. So I think Tunsil's in play. I think Ramsey's in play. They've spent a heck of a lot of time with Joey Bosa, who comes here in a couple of days. And then I think you can't rule out, you know, a scenario where some other teams – try to move up to one to secure a quarterback. And if the Titans can drop back and still get one of those top players and get extra picks, that has to be considered as well. So it's not as just, hey, the Titans need a left tackle, taking Tunsil, and we're on to the Browns. I mean, there's a lot in play here with a couple of weeks to go before the draft. And there's a lot of intrigue at number one. It's not as simple as a lot of people maybe try to lead you to believe.
Obviously, Ramsey still in play there at number one, as you said, Jim. But how do they feel when you look at the two offensive tackles, which is where it seems like the trade-down scenario would come in for Tennessee to still be able to get one of those two guys? Is it really that they feel like Stanley and Tunsil are that close? Do you get the sense that they do like one of those guys more than the other?
Well, I mean, I think they're looking at – I mean, they went to Tunsil's pro day. He's coming to town. I know Stanley spent some time with him, went to his pro day, going to visit with him as well. I think they're looking at both of those guys and trying to see how much of a gap there is. But I think you also not – you know, those aren't the only two tackles in this draft class. I mean, I think you got to look at another group of players that are – in this class and figure out how much the gap is there and figure out whether you want a left tackle or a right tackle. Because, I mentioned Roos earlier. I mean, I think this draft has some, and I don't want to mention all the tackles that are thought highly of because I don't want to give anything, you know, away. But, obviously we're working with the team now, but there's a group of tackles who are certainly that people around the league will tell you are very capable of stepping in and being a starter. So I don't think you can just limit it to Tunsil and Stanley. I think you've got to consider some other tackles who could be had, you know, in the second round. I mean, the Titans got him, you know, pick right out of the gate in the second round. So you're going to be able to get a good player there who could be a full-time starter. And let's say this team is not ready to, you know, dismiss Taylor Lewan as a starting left tackle, then you're looking for a right tackle and not necessarily a left tackle that has to go that early. So a lot of things to consider. I mean, keep in mind, you know, Taylor Lewan was just taken with the 11th overall pick just a couple of years ago. You know, people still have a high opinion of him here. So if you're looking for a right tackle, you'll be able to get a guy in the second round and maybe wouldn't have to go after one of the top two.
All right, Jim, let's wrap up with this then. All things considered, including the tackle position or whatever you want to put in there, how do you see the three biggest needs at this very moment for the Tennessee Titans?
Well, I think you got to get help in the secondary. I mean, moving forward, I think cornerback, safety is a huge priority. I mean, they signed Rashad Johnson to a one-year deal, you know, a veteran safety out of Arizona, and he'll play alongside Denore Searcy. But, again, that's a one-year deal. So, you know, I think you're looking for the future in the secondary, and that could be corner or safety. I think you need obviously help on the offensive line still. That's another big need. Still wouldn't rule out, despite the addition of Rashard Matthews from Miami, I still wouldn't rule out, you know, a receiver in this draft. And then I think you need more help, probably at the linebacker position, whether it's an edge rusher. It gives you depth behind a rack pulling Morgan, but maybe some help inside where you're protected a little bit more there as well. I know that's more than three. But,
that's all right.
Yeah, but this team has signed. I mean, I think this team has now added 8-9 new guys in free agency or through the waiver process and re-signed some of their own. But there's still some holes. The holes aren't as big as they were at the start off season, but still a lot of pieces still need to be picked.
All right, Jim Wyatt, follow him on Twitter if you want to keep up with what's going on with the Tennessee Titans. He's been covering them since 1999. J. Wyatt Sports, that's the initial J, Wyatt Sports, and, of course, at TitansOnline.com, our go-to guy in Nashville when it comes to the Tennessee Titans. Jim, we appreciate it. It's going to be fascinating to see how the top part of the draft plays out, no question about that. And everyone here in Jacksonville wishes the Titans nothing but bad luck, however it does play out. So, you know that's just being honest, buddy.
Yep, I understand that. So I appreciate it, Mike. You guys have a great day. Thanks for having me.
Take care, man. Jim Wyatt, TitansOnline.com, simply the best guy that's ever covered that team up there in Nashville when it comes to getting the accurate scoop. Tony, I think we had a clean sweep today on the fan feedback spotlight, at least on the first place. Did every Jaguar vote you see vote the Jags having the best all season in the division?
I saw a bunch of Jaguars at number one. I think I saw one with Houston at one.
I think you got to consider the Texans simply because it depends. I mean, obviously, we don't know what Brock Osweiler is going to turn out to be, but they got the best available quarterback that was out there. And that being the most significant position in football, if he is a significant upgrade over Hoyer, keep in mind Hoyer played pretty well during the regular season. He had the meltdown in the postseason. I don't know if Osweiler is going to top him in the regular season, but that's the team I think is the contender with the Jags for the best all season. Titans, Colts would follow in that order for me. So we're not going to read through all of them. The vast, vast, vast majority of you picked the Jaguars as having the best all season so far. Not surprised with the audience that we've got right here. That does it for us on this Tuesday here on Jaguars Today. Good stuff with Jim Wyatt from Titans Online, John Harris from HoustonTexans.com, and Tom James, the Terre Haute Tribune star, covering the other three teams and the also-rans in the AFC South is what we'll call them in 2016. Draft now only 16 days away, 2 weeks away from the media mock draft and moments away from XL primetime. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey, signing off for Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.